Hi, my name is Ellie. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'd like to thank the Young People's Committee for this opportunity. It is a privilege to give back to the organization that helped save my life. I'd also like to thank my sponsors and the many people who have helped me over these years. Today is OA's 60th birthday, so I feel especially lucky to do this today. Everything I say here will be based on my own experience. It does not represent Overeaters Anonymous as a whole, so please take what you like and leave the rest. I believe I was born a compulsive overeater. I say that because I had a problem with food from birth. At 3 months, I tripled my weight and the doctor told my mom to stop breastfeeding. Nonetheless, I gained so much weight in my first year and became so roly-poly that it took me 18 months to walk. The excess weight on my arms made it look like I had muscles. My mom's friends jokingly asked her if she had me lifting weights. And at one point, I ate so many carrots that I turned orange. In short, food was a problem even before I knew the word for food. The first time I remember binging, I was 4. I was at a friend's house where there was lots of what I would later call good food, my name for sugary, greasy, or other quote-unquote exciting foods often found in the junk food aisle. Sugar was limited in our home, so at my friend's, I ate 4 bowls of sugar cereal and was sick the entire evening. If I didn't have a hopeless condition of mind and body that condemned me to go on eating against my will, I might have learned from that experience. When it comes to food and eating, though, it's as if there's a missing piece in my brain. In the program, I've heard it called a built-in forgetter. For as long as I can remember, I've loved food. I even started hiding it early on. I wanted to protect my supply. I also didn't want anyone to see how much I was eating. Being alone with my food made me feel safe and protected. Things shifted a bit during my teen years. I still loved food, but I became more aware of my body and appearance. Thin girls were admired, so I wanted to be thin. That posed a problem. I wanted to be thin, yet I still wanted to eat as much as I could. And more. Starting high school in a new state didn't help. There were a lot of thin girls there. For that and a few other reasons, I felt like I didn't fit in. Like I didn't belong. My freshman year, I hit my highest weight. Some boys wrote a comment about it in their locker room. I was crushed. I felt so ashamed and humiliated. So I ate more. I didn't know how to deal with awkward and uncomfortable feelings without eating. I often picked friends who also had food and body issues. We planned our diets and our diet breaks together. 1 carb, 3 proteins, 1 veggie, 1 fruit, 0 fats. Our meals often went like that. We spoke the same language, so we were comfortable with each other. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the main text of AA and a main text of OA, uses the phrase period of controlled drinking. For our purposes, I'll say period of controlled eating. Amidst my yo-yo dieting and binging, I had 1 period of controlled eating. It was after that locker room incident. For almost 4 months, I stayed on a diet and with no breaks. By the end of the summer, I had lost 40 pounds. When I returned to school, people gave me all these compliments. It felt so good to finally be thin. That period didn't last, though. As a real compulsive overeater, it couldn't. I am powerless over food. Unless I use the 12 steps, my periods of quote-unquote controlled eating will inevitably be followed by periods of binging and loss of control. So within weeks of losing that weight, I started eating whole bars of cheese and whole boxes of cereal again. My outsides had changed, but inside I was the same. I was still full of fear, shame, and self-hatred. To deal with those feelings, I overate. OA taught me that the same person will eat compulsively again. So if I don't change, I'll eat. And if I don't eat, I'll change. Change is often not easy for me, but I became more open to it as my eating worsened, and I developed the gift of desperation. The next several years were essentially one failed attempt to control my eating. Or, perhaps more accurately, many failed attempts to control my eating. At a certain point, the obsession with food got so bad that I could no longer eat in the presence of others. I couldn't handle being around the food or around those who seemed able to control their food. The Big Book calls such people those who drink, or eat in our case, with impunity. I resented those people, and being around them made me resent myself even more. It didn't occur to me that the problem may have been within me, so the logical response was to remove myself from what I perceived the problem to be, food and being around quote-unquote normal eaters. So I ate alone. The Big Book uses the phrase drinking career. Unlike most people, I have a professional career and an eating career. And in my case, my eating resume may be more impressive than my professional one. Seriously, to avoid eating more, sometimes I chewed 5 packs of sugarless gum a day. I weighed myself multiple times a day and often put on my skinny jeans to see how I was doing. I over-exercised and took laxatives, often entire boxes at a time. One of my bulimic friends showed me how to make myself throw up. Thankfully, I never could. At the time, I wasn't so grateful, though. Had I been able to throw up, I reasoned, I could have eaten more. I considered myself a failure and a wimp for not being able to make myself throw up. In retrospect, that shows me how not well I was. Often, after yet another diet ended in yet another binge, I surrendered to the idea that this was how adult life was supposed to be, an endless cycle of dieting, binging, and trying to lose the weight I had previously gained and lost. On almost every Monday, the first of the month and New Year's Eve, I made vows to change my eating and so I could be thin. One New Year's Eve, I made my pledge at midnight, and by 12:11, I was already in the candy jar. I had little hope that life could be different. At times, I had little hope that life was worth living. The Big Book says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. To me, that means that every time I go up alone against the food, I lose. That's why this is a we program. We can do what I can't. OA and the 12 steps have given me sanity with food. I define sanity with food as having a choice. Before OA, I didn't have a choice. I was driven to eat against my will. I remember one time when in my mind I was putting the peanut butter jar back in the cupboard, but my body kept returning to it to eat more and more. My mind was saying one thing and my body was doing another. That was powerlessness in action, and it was terrifying. Thanks to OA, today I have choices. I went to my first OA meeting a month after turning 17. It was at a treatment center and they thought I was the leader. I found that funny, especially since I had been outside binging in the car. That was typical of me at the time, looking put together on the outside to compensate for feeling inadequate inside. After all, if you thought I was okay, well then maybe I was. Ironically, I would end up as a patient at that same treatment center 6 months later. The universe definitely has a sense of humor. There was something comforting about being in a room with others who understood how I felt about food, and especially those with a solution. They did some of the same wacky things I did with food. I had finally found my people. OA was my tribe. I did not get abstinent right away. Instead, I came to OA for almost 5 years, during which time I had periods of abstinence followed by periods of binging. In those years, I went to multiple treatment centers and recovery homes. They helped, even a lot at times, but the result was the same. Eventually, I had to leave and inevitably began dieting and binging again. I sometimes hear struggling OA members say that they wish that they could go to such places. As someone who spent a lot of time in them, my experience is that they are not the be-all and end-all. They helped me to stop temporarily, but not to stay stopped. I needed OA and the 12 steps to do that. Although I continued to eat compulsively on and off for 5 years while in OA, I never left. Even when I binged before or after a meeting, I went. Sometimes I spent most of a meeting thinking about what I would eat after the meeting. Still, I kept coming back. The people in the program kept loving me too. In OA, they say, let us love you until you are able to love yourself. That's how it worked for me. I call my eating disorder a disease. It kept me in a state of dis-ease. Still, no matter how out of control I was when alone with food, I prided myself on being able to control what I ate around others. At the end of my eating career, however, I could no longer keep up the appearances. One such event happened after I had been OA just over a year. I was at a friend's house. She had gone to bed, but her brother was up watching TV. And the TV was in the kitchen area. I had already eaten dinner and was not, technically speaking, hungry, but the driving need to eat took over. My friend's brother wouldn't budge. 10:30, 11, 11:30. I was so irritated. Finally, after midnight, I couldn't take it anymore. I had to eat. So I binged in front of him. That marked a turning point in my eating career. I felt so ashamed, and even more so when he told me that he had never seen anyone eat so much in his life. Since it's a progressive disease, the worst of my eating happened after I came to OA. One time I was living in a dangerous city and had that driving need to eat at 4 a.m. The door at the 24-hour store was locked. The employee came to open it and yelled, "Are you crazy? There was just an armed robbery around the corner." Well, that didn't stop me. Nothing stopped me. I was willing to literally risk my life to get food. I tried geographical cures, too. I thought that if I went to Spain and ate azúcar, the Spanish word for sugar, it would affect me differently than eating sugar in the United States. I'm no Einstein, but I'm reasonably intelligent. Nonetheless, I truly thought that eating sugar in a different country where it had a different name would produce a different result. That's how strong my denial was. OA taught me that I bring myself wherever I go. It also taught me an acronym for denial. Don't even know I am lying. When it came to food, I was an expert in self-deception. During this time, I kept attending meetings. The program wasn't working for me, but I saw it working for others. They gave me hope. I didn't understand why those people weren't giving me diets to follow, though, or telling me what to eat. Instead, they gave me steps, traditions, and tools. Their solution was not logical. When I was honest with myself, though, neither was my way of eating. It's not logical to eat 4 bacon cheeseburgers, 2 supersized fries, a big candy bar, and a pint of ice cream just because I had a feeling, or because I didn't like how someone looked at me. That doesn't make sense, especially in light of the pain it ultimately caused, and the weight it always added. In OA, I learned that insanity is continuing to do the same thing and expecting different results. When it came to food, I was insane. I was told that, in order to recover, I needed to be willing to go to the same lengths that I had gone to in my disease. Uh-oh, I spent a lot of time and energy on food and eating. I also did many not-so-logical things when eating compulsively. Did that mean that to get this recovery thing, I would have to put a lot of time and energy into doing something that didn't seem so logical either? Working these steps and using these traditions? My sponsor pointed out that it didn't matter what I thought of the program. Whether I agreed with or understood it or not, it was working for people. For the first time in my life, I saw men and women with eating disorders living productive lives. They were working, going to school, traveling, some were married and even had children. They all had problems, but they were not eating over them. That absolutely blew my mind and gave me hope. Before OA, when it came to food, I had lost all hope. Some people are abstinent before they work the steps. I had to work the steps to get and stay abstinent. That's because I am powerless over food. When it comes to eating, I have zero power. Zilch. Working the steps was the only way I gained access to a power that allowed me to abstain. Bill W., the co-founder of AA, said, "I have since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying and more useful than the life I lived before." That's how I feel about my life before and after OA. Thanks to OA, it's been 24 years, one day at a time, that I've been abstinent. People in OA define their abstinence in different ways. Not eating between planned meals is how I define mine. Except for one day when I was sick and slept through dinner, I've eaten 3 meals a day with nothing in between for 24 years. OA makes a distinction between abstinence and plan of eating. I have been perfectly abstinent for 24 years, but I cannot say that all of my meals have always been perfect. As a now past OA friend used to say, I wouldn't necessarily want to publish all of my meals in the OA Lifeline. Seriously, I'd publish 99% of them there, though. For someone who ate like I did, that's pretty amazing, even beyond my wildest dreams type of stuff. Because I didn't just eat over anything, I ate over everything. The desire to eat seemed to be in my DNA. Throughout these 24 years, a lot has happened. I've been through losses, breakups, deaths, a serious medical illness, and a complex medical treatment. I've moved and have started over a lot. I've survived periods of depression without overeating. It wasn't easy, but with OA, it is possible. Since I came into OA young, I've had a lot of growing up to do here. And I intentionally put that in the present perfect verb tense because I'm still growing up. Thanks to the program and the people in it, I've learned to deal with some of life's harsh realities without the crutch of excess food. There have been amazing times in these 24 years too. In OA, I have met some of the best friends I've ever had. I was so isolated and lonely when I was eating compulsively. I knew lots of people, but I didn't feel so connected to them, or that I could lay down my guard and be my true self with them. Thanks to OA, I don't have to be alone anymore. I like and respect myself a lot more now, too. I never thought that would be possible when I was in my disease. These days, I'd say about 90% of the time, I don't think about food or my body. I haven't weighed myself in years. I go by my clothes. When I go to a doctor's office, I turn around and I say, I don't want to know. For years, I let a number determine my worth. Before OA, my closet I had clothes every size from 6 to 16. After 10 years of abstinence, I had worn the same jeans so long that they had holes in them. And they didn't when I bought them. That astounded me. If you only saw me before OA, when I used to get on the scale 10 times a day, or go to 3 different stores to get my food, because I was too embarrassed to buy it all at once. If you knew how many times I said I was having a party, when really it was a party for one. How I once walked 4 miles in a foreign country in the dead of night because I had to have my food. How I didn't shower while binging so I wouldn't have to look at my body. If you saw me then, you might not recognize me now. By relying on the program, freedom from compulsive overeating and from being obsessed with my body have been realities for over half of my life. And I may have entered this program as a young person, but I'm no spring chicken now. Seriously, these days when I have a food or body thought, I see them as a flag, an indicator that something is off in my spiritual program and that I have to turn back to the steps if once again I want to be free. During my disease, I dropped out of college several times. With continuous abstinence, I graduated. I even got graduate degrees. With abstinence, so much is possible. Thanks to OA, I spent 12 years living abroad. How? Well, I made sure that there were OA meetings wherever I lived. For me, face-to-face meetings are essential. One summer, I lived in a city that had 12-step meetings of another kind, but not OA meetings. So during the week, I went to open meetings of the other fellowship, and on weekends, I traveled 2.5 hours each way to go to OA meetings. Not everyone needs the tool of face-to-face meetings as much as I did and do. Meetings are one of OA's 9 tools of recovery. We are all unique. Different people use different tools at different times. Recently, I heard of a woman with 4 children and a job. She went to her first face-to-face meeting when she had 4 years of abstinence. She had been working the steps, using the tools, and participating in online OA meetings. That would not have worked for me, but it did work for her. The 12 steps have helped me figure out who I am and what I need to do to take care of myself. If the steps can help me to do that, then they can surely help you to do it too. One of my favorite sections of the Big Book says, when we look back, we see that the things that came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. When I got to OA, I was so sick that I thought I'd never travel again. Fast forward almost 30 years, and now I've attended OA meetings in over 20 countries and 12-step meetings of some kind and many more. That was definitely beyond my wildest dreams. I think it's important to mention that as compulsive overeaters, we can always attend open meetings of other 12-step fellowships. Always an offshoot of Alcoholics Anonymous. Why not go straight to the source? My dreams may not be your dreams and vice versa. Still, whatever our dreams may be, they are more attainable in OA. 25 years ago, when I was sitting on the couch in front of the TV, alone with the shades drawn and my pints of this and big bags of that, enough food to feed a small army, I never would have dreamed I'd have the life I've had in these past 24 years. In fact, I would have shortchanged myself if I'd gotten what I wanted. I thought I was doomed. Thanks to OA, I found freedom. So I came to OA powerless over food, and working the steps gave me the power to abstain and be free, and it gave me a design for living, not just eating, that works. And it gave me better friends than I've ever had in my life, and many other gifts. That's not a bad deal, especially since I don't have to pay for OA. There is a suggested donation, but unlike with doctors, therapists, and diet programs, no payment is required to attend OA. I don't know too many organizations like that in the world. I want to return to the issue of God for a moment. When I first came to OA, I didn't want to hear that 3-letter word. I had a lot of anger toward my perception of such a being, if one even existed. My parents were divorced, my dad lived an hour away, and I didn't see him my entire childhood, he didn't pay child support, there were financial challenges at home, there was a second marriage, step and half-siblings, there was alcoholism, there was violence. There was also a lot of talk of God and religion, but I didn't see actions that matched those words. When I got to OA, hearing those 3 letters made me want to walk right back out the door and in the other direction. Thankfully, the program says, and this comes from the AA 12 and 12, the hoop you have to jump through is a lot wider than you think. Relax. All you truly need is an open mind. And the Big Book tells us that we can choose our own conception of God. At first, I used the substitution method. So for a long time, OA was my higher power. In OA, I saw results that I could not produce on my own. Moreover, our 12 steps starts off by saying, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. So, if we thoroughly work the first 11 steps, we are promised a spiritual awakening in step 12. Our invitation to you affirms this. It says, as a result of practicing the steps, the symptoms of compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors are removed on a daily basis. That sounds like a promise to me. When I got to OA, the terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening scared and disgusted me. They also sounded vague and esoteric. The Big Book helped dispel the ambiguity. At the end of the book, in a section called Spiritual Experience, it says, the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening mean the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism. I substituted compulsive eating for alcoholism, and that's how I learned that spiritual awakening and spiritual experience, as defined by the program, are not necessarily religious. Members are invited to continue their religious practices or to adopt new ones if they choose, but OA has no affiliation with religion. As per our 10th tradition, OA has no opinion on outside issues, and in OA, religion is an outside issue. In that same section of the book, it says, most of our experiences develop slowly, over time. Quite often, friends are aware of the difference long before he is. After 8 years of abstinence, I ran into someone with whom, years earlier, I had gone to high school on the other side of the country. After talking for a long time, he said to me, you are completely different than you were in high school. Thank you, OA, or thank you, God, some might say. I hated who I was in high school. OA turned me into a person that it was easier for myself and others to like. The Big Book says that willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials to recovery. Practicing those principles has not always been easy, especially in a world that much of the time does not practice them. OA taught me that I don't have to be perfect. We are not saints, the Big Book says. We strive for spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. What a relief. Before OA, I always tried to be perfect. And inevitably, I always failed. Thanks to OA, I now know that part of being human is, well, being human. That means making mistakes. The 10th step says, when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. It doesn't say if we were wrong. In other words, I will make mistakes. Accepting that has made life much easier for me. Moreover, the program provides me with a pathway out of my mistakes, the 12 steps. To wrap it up, I'll share some things that have helped my recovery in the hopes that they may help yours. First, even with almost 29 years in the program and 24 years of abstinence, I don't consider myself better than anyone here. Something I really love about OA is that it does not follow the parameters or hierarchies of the outside world. In OA, we are all equal, whether newcomer or seasoned old-timer. At work, I do not have the same status as my boss. But in OA, there are no stars or VIPs. Even if we are professionals in the outside world, when it comes to OA, we are just compulsive eaters trying to recover from our own eating disorders. Moreover, OA is a 24-hour program. That means that the person with the quote-unquote most abstinence is the one who got up the earliest. I got up at 8:30 this morning. If you woke up earlier and have not eaten compulsively today, then you have quote-unquote more abstinence than me. As one of my favorite OA friends says, OA is not a competitive sport. The highest level we attain here is abstinent. I like to add human to that too. Secondly, I do not underestimate the power of this disease. The program calls it cunning, baffling, and powerful. I like to add patient to that list. They say that when I'm in a meeting, my disease is outside the door doing push-ups. There is also a metaphor with the disease of alcoholism and a tiger. When alcoholics stop drinking, they put the tiger in the cage and can throw away the key. As compulsive overeaters, we have to walk the tiger 3 times a day. Not surprisingly, OA has been called the PhD of 12-step programs. The Big Book says we can recover, but we are not cured of this disease. I quote, "What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition." Step 3 in the OA 12 and 12 calls the program simple but not easy. As an OA friend says, it's easier to stay abstinent than to get abstinent, but I still have to work at it now. Navigating the vicissitudes of this world is not always easy. Well, at least not for me. Next, it really helped to find a sponsor and home group to whom I could be accountable. I was told to find a sponsor who had what I wanted. I wanted someone with freedom from compulsive eating. Having and being a sponsor are essential for me. Nowadays, if I can't find a sponsor in a face-to-face meeting, there are sponsors available online. OA has an entire virtual region now with online and hybrid meetings, face-to-face meetings with online participation. We have come so far. When I got to OA, we called in our food by putting a dime into a payphone. Now I'm really dating myself. Seriously, at one virtual meeting that I attended, there were people from 5 countries. It was so cool. These days, thanks to the internet, I can always attend a meeting or listen to a podcast. The old excuse of, I don't have time for a meeting, no longer holds. Well, at least not with my sponsor. I will make a quick plug for face-to-face meetings. Even if you are one of the people taking advantage of the awesome new OA resources available online, please consider coming to face-to-face meetings once in a while. Sharing my experience, strength, and hope with others, and especially with newcomers in person, can be very helpful to them and to me. It's also been important for me to remember that our 12th tradition says to place principles before personalities. As a perfectly imperfect human being, I can't expect people in the program, including myself, to not have flaws. In OA, we all have clay feet. That's why the message is more important than the messenger. People in OA have let me down. I've let people in OA down, and I will again. The program and its principles, however, have never failed me. It works when I work it. And lastly, to stay in this program, I had to find an abstinence and food plan that one day at a time were livable, achievable, and right for me. The steps guided me there. In hindsight, I'm glad no one told me what to eat when I first got here. If they had, I might have left. OA is made up of compulsive eaters of all types. Anorexics, bulimics, bingers, grazers, compulsive overeaters, exercisers, dieters, and so on. As it says in the third step in the OA 12 and 12, I quote, "What is a healthy choice for one might be lethal for another." As a member and sponsor, I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope with you, to help you find your truth, not to insist that you adopt mine. Heck, I don't even know what's best for me half the time. How could I possibly know what's best for you? I can, however, share what's worked for me with you. Then we can work the steps to find what's right for you. To me, this involves attraction and retention of membership. In the United States, among professionals, there's a widespread acceptance that AA offers a viable solution for people with alcohol problems. Almost routinely, judges, doctors, and therapists direct those with alcohol problems to AA. Sadly, this isn't yet the case with OA. I've known professionals and even entire treatment centers who won't send their patients to OA because they think we support a certain way of eating. Yet that is not what our literature says. Our invitation to you says, I quote, "We do not advocate any particular plan of eating." In Tradition 10 in the OA 12 and 12, it asks, I quote, "Do we ever give the impression that there's an OA opinion on diets, on weight loss programs, on food plans, on exercise, on sugar? Although many of us refrain from eating sugar, that is a personal choice, not the opinion of OA as a whole. OA has no opinion on food plans, so please don't stay away because of that." Tradition 1 in the OA 12 and 12 tells a true story of an OA group temporarily divided by food plans and how the issue was resolved. It says, I quote, "Unity does not mean uniformity. In OA, we learn we can disagree with people on important issues and still be supportive friends. We listen with open minds and learn to express ourselves without insisting that everyone do things our way." According to our first tradition, the welfare of the group comes before that of the individual. I couldn't have stayed in recovery all these years without OA. So for the sake of unity and my personal recovery, which depends upon it, I try to set aside my opinions or judgments of others' food plans and focus on the cement that truly binds us, the solution found in the 12 steps. Dr. Bob, the co-founder of AA, said, "Our 12 steps resolve themselves into the words love and service." Wise words from someone who helped create an organization that has led millions worldwide to recover from a hopeless state of mind and body. And the big book says, "Love and tolerance of others is our code." I try to apply that to people inside the program as well as to those outside of it. You've now heard parts of my eating career and OA story. With all my yo-yo dieting, by the time I was 21, I'd gained and lost over 300 pounds. I'd also been in treatment centers and recovery homes 4 times. If with the help of this program, one day at a time, I can stop eating compulsively, then so can you. If I can pursue my dreams because of OA and abstinence, then so can you. Keep coming back. Don't quit before the miracle. And you are the miracle. So am I. We all can be miracles thanks to OA.